Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Unicorn's Couch. We are in episode 5. And as we warned you, this episode is going to touch on some truth and reconciliation within relationships. I want to first just let everybody know again where you can hear us. You can hear us at iHeartRadio, Apple iTunes, Facebook, Simplecast, Spotify, Deezer, Dogcatcher, Chrome Mobile, Firefox, and Stage Fright. We also implore you, if you have any questions or comments, please hit us up at unicornscouch@gmail.com. So today, I'd be remiss if I didn't introduce my two partners in crime. You know, we have my man Jeremy, who's here. He's back again. And my man Oren, he's back again. And of course, I'm Robert Bacon. And, you know, we're going to delve into some things today. Hopefully a topic that people want to talk about, or at least sparks some conversations within yourself, your loved ones, or just in your community. So I'm going to start this out with a quote. The quote that I have is this: I've decided to break up with myself. We're done. We're over. You're my ex. You know, as through my reconciliation, I found that the only truth that I have presented to myself was that I'm not truthful at all. Now, that quote is from Robert Bacon. That's right. That quote is from me. I had to break up with myself, because what I'm realizing is I'm not truthful about issues that I need to reconcile. And before I can reconcile with other people, I have to reconcile with myself. Mm-hmm. And so when I say I broke up, I'm saying it's okay to have a good breakup and look at some things and realize what was working and what wasn't, and then come back together, all with the sake of us being better, us, me, meaning me, excuse me. So first thing that I have for you guys, of course, is some questions. And some of these questions, I want to let the listeners know, are not just from us. They're from questions from some of our kids, our coworkers, our community. We kind of just put it together. So we wanted to kind of get everybody's take on it on the Unicorns podcast. So, O and Jay, are you ready? Are you with me? Let me hear you.
Yeah, we are here.
Yes, sir.
All right. So first question I got is, why are we attracted to people? Not just because of the good things, like about how they look about them, but also because of their pain. You know, like we want our pain to somehow be connected to their pain, so we can kind of fight this pain together, be pain warriors. Oh, how you feeling about that?
One of the things I want to go back for a second and just commend you on that quote. The depth of that was really, really vulnerable and honest. And I believe if we're going to start to answer your question, we have to talk about relationships from the standpoint of vulnerability. The quality of relationships that I've seen in our work and in our personal lives and things like that are predicated on vulnerability and the willingness to go places and be in spots that you can really grow in. And so when you ask the question that you ask, the first thing that comes to mind to me is this notion of resilience. Like people are looking at mirrors oftentimes. Statistically, I learned this in undergrad in marriage and family counseling, that it's more true that birds of a feather than opposites attract. So oftentimes people see themselves or see qualities and characteristics or complementary qualities and characteristics under the shared same values that they see in other people. So I don't know if it's always that they're attracted to the pain, but they're attracted to the resilience, the ability to battle through, the ability to get to a place. They look at it and they personalize it. They say, oh, if they could fight like that for themselves, then they can fight like this in our relationship. And so I feel like when people identify, because the question was very specific, and whomever asked the question, and when they identify it, by pain, then what happens is that pain is their partner. Pain is their marriage partner, their girlfriend, their boyfriend. And so what happens is that when they see pain, that I'm familiar with that. So let me go with that. Let me hold on to that because that's what I know.
Okay.
Yeah. And if I may add on, because I think that we have a subconscious way of normalizing familiarity. Right. But we also have to understand and appreciate that what's normal or what's familiar is not always healthy. And so if we come from places of pain, if we have unhealed wounds, right, whether it's in childhood, ultimately, right, a lot of things come up to or, you know, come from, you know, how we were born and raised, how we experienced life from a young age. But also if we have unhealed wounds in teenage and adolescence and young adult life, right, then oftentimes we're attracted to what's familiar because we normalize it and there's a sense of comfort there. Right. And so not to reduce the conversation to misery loves company, right? But it's almost as though that I can relate to that pain, right? In hopes that you can heal my pain and I can heal your pain, right? And so we kind of look for external symbols or external healers rather than kind of looking within ourselves to say, what can I do to heal my own pain, right? Mm-hmm. What can I do to reconcile the incongruence that exists within me? Right? We're looking for that external help, right?
Absolutely.
I'm appreciating what you both are saying. And, you know, I'm coming from a place of understanding that, you know, that attractiveness may have been a precursor or inclination, you know, that this person, as you said, would be a good ally to help me defeat the pain, right, Jeremy? Like you said, you know, this is a good ally, you know, either the past or the present pain. But I think where we fall to, you know, understand the truth of a matter is that, you know, when that person doesn't meet the criteria or can't help, then we start to look at them as being weak, you know, never revealing that the truth was that we can never reconcile this by ourselves. And that person actually failed miserably at a task that they were even unaware of in the first place. So, you know, We have to look at people again, not necessarily as allies, but also, you know, let them know that, hey, one of the things that I found important, and this is the truth, is that I seen how you fought that fight. And I thought or I think that you would be a good ally with me in my fight and in my thought. And then you give that person, you know, the understanding of what they need to do or what the task may be. And if they decide to take it or not, it's up to them, but they know that is truth there.
And so I want to jump in on that, Rob, because you make some good points and I want to illustrate it a little bit through an example. Sometimes in relationships, people are more familiar with roles than they are relationships. And so when they get into relationships or try to get into relationship, they go at it and pursue it from a particular role. You mentioned allies. So if my role in the relationship is to help you be better, they think that that defines the relationship. If I am helping you be better, then that's my role in the relationship. And some people embrace that and they take it and things like that. But roles in relationships change. They evolve over time. Right. And so, you know, I look at things like I never see it as a complete failure. I do see it as lessons that need to be learned. And what I've seen in some of the work that I've done with couples and people is that, you know, sometimes people are unaware of the work and not really willing to commit to the time to do it. I just want to add that piece.
No, I you know, I really appreciate that. And you're talking about the work. The work very much is, am I willing to even do that, right? Like you said earlier, the vulnerability of it. Do people, when they do these roles, understand how to maneuver to the next role or the next stage? And in talking about that, that brings me to my second question. You know, do people believe that love, right, the emotion of love, Do they believe that that's the ultimate con? Like, are the people we choose as lovers, you know, are they the good mark? Like, thinking that you can somehow be successful with this emotion of love, right? Not understanding that, you know, once love is involved, then again, your role may change, or what you think about this person may change. You know, I think it's very important to notice, you know, that we all get things from people we choose to have relationships with, you know, all the pain and the lies that they give us, and we give them as well, you know, could most assuredly be a tactic to feel better, you know, in the good times, sort of, you know, short battles in a war. But, you know, you're conning yourself, where there's not a lot of truth if you feel like you can conquer love, you know, because I think love actually changes things. Jeremy, what do you think, you know, why do people kind of feel like they can conquer love in their relationships and not knowing that, you know, it could change their whole dynamic of what they're going to do?
Yeah. So, you know, the question, as I heard it, was, is love the ultimate con, right? Yeah. And I don't know what other people think, but my response is love is the ultimate, period, right? Some people use it for pro, positive. Mm-hmm. Other people use it as a con for deception, right? Mm-hmm. And so they may hide behind this veil of love, right? Because I think if we're honest with ourselves, if I'm honest with myself, I've struggled for much of my life to truly understand and overstand and to appreciate what love actually is.
Okay.
Right? Because love can be so transformative. Love can be so profound that we may not even recognize it. We may run from it. Right. As Khalil Gibran had written in The Prophet, right? Love has this ability not only to crown us, but crucify us.
Mm.
Love has a way of not only growing us, but pruning us. And so if we're so afraid of being crucified or so afraid of being pruned that we run from love, then we might be missing out on what the power of love may offer or invite us to experience. Right? Does love hurt? Does love heal?
Yeah.
And if your lover and your healer are two different people, you might need to reevaluate who your partner is.
Woo.
Yeah. Right?
Yes, sir.
But in working with myself and with my wife and working professionally as a helping professional, you know, what I've come to understand and realize and to just really, truly respect is that love is, in its pure form, when we experience it, love is far more than we can define. All right. Love is the most radical and revolutionary act that we may ever give ourselves and to others. Right. And so I want to maybe broaden the conversation, if not in this podcast today, but just broaden the interpretation of what love can be and what love is. Because if we think that love is all romanticized, you know, feel good pleasure, then I think that we have a very superficial experience of what love is in actuality. Right. And so I don't know if I think that might be a long answer to a very short question. So I don't want to, you know, go off too far on a tangent. But you know, Oren, what are your thoughts here?
Well, I look at love in kind of different benchmarks. One, what type of love are we talking about? Because there's different types of love. And some people don't really understand or want to understand what type of love it is. Then we're talking about at what point are you experiencing. So oftentimes people, and I find this pretty ironic, when they're young, they say it's young love or immature love, or they didn't understand it until you experience some significant pain from it. And it's carried over until adulthood. So it's not insignificant. It's very important. All the agape, Lord, is all the different terminologies of love, all the styles of love are all relevant in your development, the love that you get from a parent. And so what I find is that in relationships, it can be the answer to the question is it can be a con if people love pain.
Mm.
Especially if they love pain over the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be agreeable to the pain, but you can love it nonetheless, meaning that you're in pain. You don't see an answer. You're not looking for an answer. So you settle in for what's being presented in your heart and your mind right now. And you just roll with that. Mm-hmm. And whether it creates pain, generates pain, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so it can be a con. Because, you know, people have to be present, they have to be aware, and they have to be accountable to it. And so one of the things I say and with couples all the time in the beginning, first session is always, hey, are you trying to be right? Or are you trying to win at this?
Mm-hmm.
And I say this before we even engage in the conversation. Why? Because I need them to understand and process. If you're trying to win, you can win at this and you can love winning and be alone.
Mm.
But if you're, I mean, you can, I said it wrong, but if you're trying to win at this, then you're going to compromise. You're going to be vulnerable. But if you're trying to be right, I'm essentially saying that's where that piece is, where if you're trying to be right, you can be right and by yourself. And so love as a con is relevant for a lot of people because they are unclear on which love they're talking about and which love they're experiencing and how they're relating to it. So in those cases, it could be more of a con, but the resilience of people, the depth of people, that it doesn't have to be a con.
That's an excellent point. You know, the next point attached to that was, you know, why people, when they say that they're in love, right? And then they pretend to have fun just to make things easier, you know, which it's belaboring your point a little, right? Like, you know, why are we all pretending, you know, with people, you know, that we say that we love? I mean, is it out of kindness? Is it maybe because of acceptance that we can't tell them, you know, what's really in our head? You know, like if we're really not feeling the same way that they're feeling, if the pain is what we're more in love with, or shall I say, you know, I agree with some people like the fight, right? Not necessarily what the fight is about. They just like the fight, the confrontation. And they use, you know, love loosely, you know, at that particular point to justify that they like the fight instead of having a truthful and conversation that brings some reconciliation to say, I really like how I feel when me and you go at it and then we make up, you know, because there are some people, like you said, that love that pain, you know, they get comfortable in it and they love that pain and they can't love themselves out of that pain or to see that you only love pain because you're used to it, right? You don't want to see anything else. You know, I would also suggest that, you know, we seldomly tell the truth to these people we love for fear of hurting them, you know, when in fact, you know, the truth will probably allow real compromise and understanding and some reconciliation. You know, how are you feeling about people who are still wearing their masks in these relationships, hiding behind the guise of love?
I really believe that people have difficulty being honest with themselves.
Mm. Mm.
I believe all people do, including myself at different times in my life, you know, because you're unclear. Will and other variables come into play. Oh, I want to feel this way about this person. I want to experience this. I want to have this romantic love. I want to, and it's difficult for people to be present all the time. And so I try, and when you think about your question, pretending, I think it speaks to the concept that you said, mass, Rob. Some people operate more freely in their mind within a mask until they don't. And when they don't, there's a significant consequence to it. There's almost guaranteed pain waiting for them because they can't be their authentic self. And so I don't know why in every case people pretend or they choose to play out a role or choose not to be honest. But I know that honesty is sometimes painful. And so maybe the challenge that they're having is that they're honest about the fear of their pain. And so they're willing to do whatever it takes to avoid that pain.
Yeah. And if I may, oftentimes that pain is the feeling of rejection or the perception of abandonment. Sure. Because if I'm true to myself and if I'm true to the other person, right, then I run the risk of being judged or rejected or left. And for some folks, there is a decision made, whether it's a subconscious function of the psyche or whether it's an actual chosen decision to say, you know what, I'm going to put this mask on in hopes that they will love the mask that I portray or that I project. Right. Okay. And although that might be effective on a superficial level, the topic of this conversation, at least part of the origin of the conversation, is truth and reconciliation, right? How can we reconcile something if we're not being honest?
Right.
Right. I share with couples all the time. I encourage them to consider, what does intimacy mean? Right. It means being naked, even with our clothes on. Right. It means being honest. And as you had spoken of earlier, Oren, you know, vulnerable. Vulnerable, you know, one definition of love, as it's been described to me, is love is like giving your partner the knife that you know they can use to stab you in the heart, but you give it to them anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Because there is a level of sacrifice, I think, that comes into the conversation as well. But in terms of wearing masks, we wear masks all the time. Paul Laurence Dunbar wrote a beautiful poem discussing the role of social masks as it relates to injustice and oppression, right? But our ego can put on a mask. Our pain can put on a mask, right? We try to project all kinds of things so that we might be able to look better in that mirror that you spoke of earlier, right? And I think the challenge is that a lot of us have a lot of unhealed and untended to wounds in our lifetime. Right. And when we're looking for, quote unquote, a better half or someone to complete us, quote unquote, it's usually because we are either wounded or unwhole within ourselves. And we look for someone else that might be able to complete us. Right. Or to be a half of that which we are missing. Right. And I just think that so many of us are walking around being unhealthy and unwhole. But we have this object of love that we're trying to either conquer, right? Or we're trying to weaponize. Hurt people will weaponize any and everything, right?
Yeah.
Right? Either to weaponize it as a form of a defensive weapon, right? Or a conquering weapon, right? And I just truly believe that we are all hurting, right? Some of us are more aware of our pains, and therefore we're more responsible for healing ourselves or seeking out that can help us to heal, right? But so many of us are just kind of caught up in the toxic relationship dynamic that we're looking for someone else, either sexually or pleasure-based, or just this kind of ideal of role-playing love that we may not even really know what the hell, what we're even doing.
Yeah.
Right?
Man, I'm feeling that. I'm feeling that. Listen, unicornscouch@gmail.com. 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 We want to hear from you specifically on this topic. We only have an hour, and I'm sure there's many questions and many, you know, diameters that we can go into this particular topic, and we want to hear from you. So shoot us an email, call us, send us a kite, a pigeon. It doesn't make a difference. We want to hear from you. We do. You know, I'm agreeing with that, and I just want to throw some more salt in the game, guys. You know, so I'm in this relationship. I'm lying to myself. I'm wearing these masks, okay? And, you know, I'm looking in the mirror, and I'm wanting this person to fight with me because I'm dealing with my pain. Tell me why, you know, we then throw in finances, and we then throw in sexual performance, and we then throw in, again, let's call it what they are, excuses for us to stay in this toxic relationship. Why is toxicity in a relationship something that we settle for all the time? And I'm not even speaking about just others. I'll speak about myself. It took me years to get out of the cycle of feeling that my role was to save someone. Captain Saver HR, right? And when I couldn't save that person, then I felt defeated, right? I felt like, well, what did I do wrong? When in fact, that person didn't want to be saved. So, you know, talk to me about these excuses that we use. Because again, like I said, you know, I have on this mask. I'm lying to myself. I'm lying to my partner, right? And, you know, I'm in this toxic relationship that's no good for any one of us. And I'm at a point where I'm not even saying to my partner, I'm looking for another ally, right? Or whatever. I'm not even saying that. And she's not saying that either, right? And we're kind of just in this place, right? Can you guys talk to me about this place?
Let me put on my clinical hat for a second. A lot of women come to me and select me as their therapist because they say to me, like, I want to work through some of my issues with men. You know, and there's some themes that come on. And to your point, there are a lot of scripts that are running in people's minds that influence them to believe and do things that are counterintuitive to where they're trying to go. One, let me go backwards because I was guilty of some of the same things. I take off my hat for a second, Rob, and say guilty of my same things of thinking that I was trying to save somebody. But in fact, that really is about us saving ourselves. Other people, and that's what the attempt is to do. So it was never about saving the other person, but it was like validating ourselves through some external process that allows us to ignore the internal work that's necessary. But going back to the clinical hat and some of the discussions and work that I'm doing with some of these magnificent women is that we really have to identify the scripts that tell us that we are not enough, that we are not to be loved, that we are not capable of receiving love. We are not capable of being pain-free. We're not, there's a whole bunch of scripts that run it. Ironically, I will say the men that come to me, same thing. They come to me because they want to be able to understand men better. They want to understand themselves in the context of men better. So they still come in with those lens and blinders on that tells them, believe the script. I have one client that love him to death dearly, but he doesn't come to the session alone. I have another female client, love her to death dearly. She doesn't come to the session alone. They come with the judge. The judge is taking a seat right next to him. And I have to spend 20 minutes telling the judge, this is not a session for you today, sir, ma'am. Okay. And so we laugh about it in the session because the script of judgment allows them to perpetuate the place that they're in and maintain it to a level they become dysfunctional.
Right.
And the dysfunctional becomes, like Jeremy said, the new norm. And so if I can do something that feels normal, let me just do that. Yeah. And I say, listen, if you're coming to the session today, I need to know, because you're only paying for one and you're coming in here with two people, judgment. You know, you're coming in here with pain and I got a love seat. So it's too tight for that.
Right.
And so those are the kind of things that I observe from a clinical perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. As you were speaking on that, man, shout out to the book, The Four Agreements, man. I don't know if anybody's ever read it. I strongly recommend it, you know, personally and professionally. But I think that's a book that really kind of helped me to understand and conceptualize what this judge inside of us really may manifest itself as being. Right. And so, you know, What I encourage folks professionally, right, is to, you know, Rob, your quote at the beginning of the show, I'm breaking up with myself, right, is such a powerful multi-leveled quote, right? I encourage folks to learn how to date yourself, right? Learn how to be at peace and solitude and learn how to love oneself before you can ever share parts of yourself with somebody else. Right. And, you know, there are, you know, not to confuse folks because it is quite dynamic, but there are times in which we have to, you know, build and destroy. We have to deconstruct elements of ourself and kind of really destroy that mask that we've been wearing or some of those masks that we've become comfortable with, right? We have to really break up with those masks to get to know what our inner self or our more vulnerable, honest, and true self is, right? And so to in order to love ourselves, we have to be true to ourselves, right? And so, yeah, breaking up with ourselves, I think, is part of that dance of getting to know ourselves on a more intimate level and loving ourselves on a more deeper level so that way when we're in the presence of someone else, who we are sharing with them isn't a more authentic self, right? So what I trust is that this conversation in and of itself is a whole season's worth of material. And if we never get a feedback comment or an email comment, I think this would be the show that would give us, you know, a bunch of them. Right. So yeah, in terms of your thoughts, Rob, where are you at with all of this? Because, you know, you have such an insightful perspective as well. What are you thinking through this conversation right now?
Well, you know, I'm trying to put myself in the writer's question to me, because, you know, through this particular fifth little session that we have, I've been there. I'm in a different place now, but I've been there. And I think that there has to be a level of maturity, you know, for you to understand who you really see in the mirror and what makes up who you see in the mirror. I think we rush a lot with a perception of what we think love is based on what we've seen in our particular relationships with our parents or our best friends. And so we try to make things work. But I think a lot of us go through relationships, you know, with this settling mentality of, okay, well, you know, I'll just deal with this until something new comes along, not taking responsibility for what we're bringing to the table or not bringing to the table, and never really fixing ourselves. Going through relationships as if we're still our 16-year-old selves, right? Still wanting the great sex, still wanting the great conversation, still wanting the butterflies when you meet him or her, still wanting that feeling, still chasing that initial feeling and never teasing that all the way out to what does normalcy look like with this particular person? Am I compatible with this person really? Does this person really like the mask that I'm showing now, or do they like me? Do I like me? So, you know, you're right. This particular topic can be a podcast season. I would love, since I have two, you know, individuals who actually do therapy with couples, I would love to do that because, again, you know, I'm gonna throw it back at you. So now I'm sitting. Oh, you didn't told me I can't bring my wife, so she can't judge. Jeremy, you telling me now I got to start dating myself. So now I'm confused, right? I'm honest. I'm being honest right now. It's about truth, right? I can't reconcile with anyone until I reconcile with myself, which means telling myself truth. So I'm screwed up right now, right?
Nope.
I know, but I mean, you understand what I'm saying?
It feels that way.
I'm putting on two different hats for our listeners, as well as, you know, my mental health hat, right? But, you know, the truth is that most of, and I'll come from a male perspective, right? Most of our heterosexual males, and I'll just use me, we come from a place of, you know, conquering. And then after we conquer, then, you know, we're not enthused anymore. We're on to the next conquest. Where do we learn that from, right? And then if we find someone who challenges us, right, then how come that challenge, although positive and negative, but let's be honest, a lot of times it is a negative challenge that keeps our attention. Why do then we settle? You know, we just settle because we feel like, you know, as the old folks say, this person is time enough for me, right? But that's not the real me. They're time enough for the mask or the person that I betrayed to them, right? Coming from a perception of what I think I should be in a relationship.
Yeah.
I need you two to work at this particular point, right? I need some work from y'all.
So I encourage folks, use your confusion, right? Mm-hmm. If we can sit with confusion with curiosity rather than judgment, that is the seat of wisdom, right? Curiosity. Let me really sit with myself and try to understand myself, right? From a hunter-gatherer perspective, if the male's role has been to go out and hunt and to bring back to the family or to the tribe, to the village, right? So the hunter-gatherer has always been kind of this excuse or this reason why men are always on the hunt for women, right? Always trying to conquer new, you know, conquests, right? The problem is what we fail to understand and what we fail to appreciate and respect is a woman is a divine being, right? Not something to prey upon.
Absolutely. Right?
I think that where we have really been, I know this is a PG all audience, you know, where we've really got it messed up, right? You know, right. If I was, you know, informally, I'd use some other colorful language, right? But where we really got things twisted is that I think that this colonial mentality, this colonial society that we've been raised and reared upon, right, is really predicated upon this hunting and conquering mentality, right? Hunting and conquering people, right? It's very different if we're going out to get sustenance to survive and to nourish and to nurture ourselves with, right? And so I think a lot of us as men have been raised up and reared that the more conquests you have, the more manly you are, as if we're out there hunting lions or deer or gazelle or that kind of thing, right? It's no rite of passage, but we're raised in that context, right? The more women that you can conquer, the more of a man that you are, right? I succumbed to it in my younger years, and I've had to kind of grow through it and grow out of it, right? So I think that's something that a lot of our young brothers, and sad to say, some of our older brothers, you know, are still kind of stuck in that spectrum of consciousness, whether it's pleasure-seeking behavior, whether it's ego-stroking behavior, whether it's that's their measurement of manhood, right? And so I think that if we earlier you had used the term, you know, what is the excuse, right? I think that if people are stuck in a level of consciousness, right, or if they're stuck in that pleasure seeking, pleasure centered mentality, right, then we've got a lot more growing to do, a lot more maturing to do, right? And so I just can't look at the individual without trying to also understand the individual within their environment. Within the environment in which they've been raised up in, both in their familial environment, with their, you know, their intimate family environment, but also the greater society at large, that we're raised up in a very toxic society, toxic masculinity society, to put it that way as well. What are your thoughts, O?
So I want to go back to the scenario that Rob brought up in the quote unquote confusion. The things that come up, that the themes that I tend to talk about a lot, is being present, right? And that means like knowing when you're being governed by your feelings, governed by emotions, and you're running a script. So oftentimes people will chase the feeling. I'm trying to escape. I don't want to feel any pain. I'm just going to do this. I'll do this with him or her. Or I'm just going to be around this person, and we're just going to escape from the pain. But when you chase the feeling, you leave blind spots.
Oof.
Those blind spots eventually turn out to be pain markers in your life,
Okay. Creating
more need for more escape because you haven't addressed the issue. The other thing is you got to do the work. Sometimes you're with people and situations, and I'm not talking about the toxic ones. I'm not talking about the abusive ones. But you're in relationships for a purpose. And while you're there, you've got to do the work. The work is not about necessarily the relationship. The work is about you. When you're on an airplane, they say, put your mask on first and then help the other person.
Yes.
Because if you don't, you may suffocate and neither one of you going to get a mask. So do the work. Don't duck it. Don't avoid it. Do it. The last thing I see as a theme is just choose not to date pain.
Oof.
Make a choice. Pain is going to be present in our lives. I'm reading a book right now called The Body Keeps Score that talks about the impact of trauma on the body and how people's response to this trauma is manifests itself. And what I'll say is like when people have lost their presence and kind of decided to date the pain, then what they do is they don't say, hey, I'm trying to date pain, but they'll live their life around it.
Mm-hmm.
They'll make decisions around pain. Pain is determining, nah, I like him, but he seems like he got it all together. No, I'm not going to go with that. I'm going to go with this person that don't have much going on that I've been dating for the last 10 years. Or, nah, she just looks good. So I'm going to keep her because I don't know if I can find somebody else that looks that good.
Mm.
You know, what it is a pain avoidance. Jeremy talked about rejection and things like that. Rejection leads to pain.
Mm-hmm.
Rejection itself is not the issue. It's the consequence of rejection that people take issue with. And so when you think about the confusion that you identified earlier in the scenarios that we talked about, I think that we have this opportunity in every situation. And I gotta say this, because this has come up several times. That means that when you are trying to be better, you can't ghost. You can't harm. You can't damage. When you're trying to be better. When you're not trying to be better, you got to acknowledge it and accept the consequences that come with it.
If I may, because on the subject of ghosting is the manifestation of dissociative behavior. It is the opposite of embodiment. Right. So when we ghost on somebody, right, language, the words that we use tell us a lot. Right. And so I just wanted to touch on that, because a lot of folks, think that ghosting might be cool or that ghosting might be their only option. Right. But it's really such a wounded place. It's such a lesser choice to be made to avoid, I think, maybe the more mature or the more necessary conversation to have. Again, talking about truth and reconciliation. Right. If I'm ghosting, I can't even look at myself, let alone another person. right? Yeah. And if we're talking, if we're genuinely really talking about truth and reconciliation, we got to show up. And like you said, oh, we got to show up and do the work. Even when we're not 100% ourselves, we're not going to be perfect. But are we working on ourselves?
And you don't have to know all the answers, but you have to learn how to ask the right questions.
How about that?
So you know, if you are, quote unquote, being selfish, because the pure definition of selfish is not a negative connotation. But if you're being selfish in its pure definition, you are doing the work so that you can be better for yourself and others around you.
Yeah, because self-care involves some forms of selfishness, right? You know, what I like to distinguish is what's the difference between being self-centered and centering yourself?
Right.
When I'm centering myself, I don't have to be in the middle of the room or the middle of the conversation, right? I can be in the corner of the room, but still be secure within myself. But if I'm self-centered, I got to be in the middle of some stuff.
Absolutely.
Right? Right. But yes. Yeah. Like Audre Lorde said, you know, self-care is not self-indulgence. It's self-preservation.
Absolutely. And if going back to if you're choosing to date pain, just know that pain will come.
Inevitable.
So listen, because you both just laid some gems on me. I want to break down something for our listeners. I want you both to help me understand what the work is that we don't want to do. Because I think what people are doing is they're not even understanding that they have to do the work. They don't know what the work is. And so, as you said earlier, oh, and Jeremy, it's better for me to stay in a position of comfort where I don't have to look at myself and ask myself truthful questions. But what is the work? For me, the work is the very beginning quote of this particular session, right? Breaking up with myself. That is part of the work. Realizing that I've been lying to myself about the perception of what I think I am, right? And that I can't even reconcile with myself of the habits that I do that are detrimental to me, which of course bleeds into the relationship. So, you know, we got a few minutes left. This is a hot topic, man. I got a bunch of other questions as well, but I want to just unpack that part. Let's talk about what the work is, okay? The scenario is, so now that I've talked with you guys and I realized and I've unpacked some things, I've lied to this person, but I realized that this person is who I want to be with. How do I start to do the work in this particular relationship so that it can be better? And one last thing, what do I do when the pain comes up when that person doesn't want to do the work with me? I think a lot of times, you know, we're in relationships and we start to do something that mimics the work, but then we shut down when we feel like we're not being supported. So then we go back to what is the status quo.
Nothing is guaranteed. Mm-hmm. You can be married and that can end and dissolve. You can be in love and that could change, but you kind of be present to your best version of yourself today.
Okay.
When you say you're going to do the work, you're going to start with being a little bit more honest about your relationship with fear. You're going to start calling it out, identifying it, not allowing yourself to excuse the fear, not allowing yourself to justify the fear. You know, that's the first phase of like kind of doing the work. It is bringing your best version of yourself daily to the table, not because of what the other person deserves, but because of what you deserve. And so sometimes doing the work requires you to sit in pain. Understand where the pain is coming from.
Right.
Not the script.
Right.
Where the pain is coming from.
Pain is coming.
The script will tell you it's something else. It's something out of your control.
It's her.
It's her. It's him.
Yeah.
It's their behavior alone. And they're contributors to it, for sure. But let's dig deeper. Are you really comfortable with rejection and pain? Because if you're not, then let's be honest about it. You know, I can go on and on, but I'll turn it over to Jay. I just want to say the first couple steps.
No, it's so important, right? Because we're so quick to anesthetize the pain, right? We're so quick to look for things that might help to create some form of anesthesia or amnesia, right? So we forget the thought or we don't feel the feeling, right? And so I think to me, a good portion of the work is knowing what our triggers are, right? One way of understanding a trigger is that a trigger is just a wound that hadn't been healed yet. And when we know what our triggers are, then we have to take some accountability and some responsibility, not to always avoid or to step around those triggers, right? Not to always feel justified to go flying off the handle when someone steps on our trigger, but to actually look at, okay, where is the origin? What is the root of that trigger? And then what can I do as a growing and maturing person to heal myself, to seek out healing, right? Rather than avoidance, or rather than some superficial, you know, pleasure seeking type of behavior, right? And you know, the other thing is that we're so often, I think, we're so quick to look for the fruit of the tree that we fail to look at the root of the tree, right? And so like what you were saying earlier, to dig deeper, we have to understand the health of ourself by looking at our roots and our origins, right? And so, that being said, healthy relationships will never be perfect or picturesque. We also have to have some reconciliation, or at least some mature understanding in terms of what are we willing to accept and what are we willing to call unacceptable behavior in a partner. All too often, we're accepting things that are unhealthy. Right? Because we'd rather be in the presence of someone else than maybe explore what life on our own might feel like, right? Because we're afraid of maybe getting to know ourselves, right? Which again, kind of goes back to, okay, I'm breaking up with myself. I'm dating myself. I'm getting to trust and to be true to myself. I'm getting to know, to love myself. Because how the heck can I give something to someone that I don't have for myself? And if I don't love myself, if I don't know myself, how can I share myself, my true self, with somebody else? Right. And so I think that's part of the work is, as you had said, get acquainted with some of that pain and suffering that we're so quick to kind of maybe turn away from. No, turn towards it. Become familiar with it. Right. Not to settle for it, but to be able to understand it in its more or original form. Right. And then to kind of go about the healing and loving and self-care practice. Go ahead, O.
I totally agree. But I have to go back because I missed a step. You have to clear out the space a little bit. You know, other people can't be a part of this relationship. You know, whether they have good intentions or not, that the work has to be done by you. If you're not careful and you don't clear the space and you're not present, you'll believe that being a savage is actually good for relationships. You'll believe in the cultural, structural oppression and the things that are permitted to enter into our ears and our head and our minds is the formula. You'll see somebody on TV or on social media that's doing it big. That's all lovey-dovey with their partner, and it seems like everything is great. But be cautious, because that never speaks to depth. So you have to clear the space in order to be honest. You know what I mean? You can't go to your friend for validation for the poor choices that you made. You gotta sit with the poor choices, make better ones.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
I digress for a second.
No. I don't want you to digress. I want people to hit up unicornscouch@gmail.com. It's getting tight in here, and if you're listening to this, it's getting tight where you at. Okay, because what these gentlemen just did is they gave you the blueprint of how you need to start to unpack and do the work. And, you know, bringing it full circle, it is only when you start to have that conversation with yourself that you'll see some change, right? And so let's do that. Let's have these conversations with ourselves. Let's get some truth so we can move towards reconciliation. Let's start to do the work. Please, let's start to do the work. Man, I am so excited. You know, again, being with you brothers, this has been excellent. I want to let everyone know you can find us on iHeartRadio, Apple iTunes, Facebook, Simplecast, Spotify, Deezer, Darkcatcher, Chrome Mobile, Firefox, and Stage Fright. Give us a listen to. If you like what you're hearing today, you're going to get more. Season 2 is going to be much, much, much off the hook than this one. We're going to touch on some things, but where are we going to get the ideas from these things? We're going to get them from you. So call us, hit us up, email us. Like I said, send a flyer. I want to hear from you. Jeremy wants to hear from you. Owen wants to hear from you. The Unicorn Couch want to hear from you. What do you want us to talk about? How do you want us to look at? We're open. Okay. Jeremy, Oren, you know, every time I wish people could actually see us because I'm shaking my head because you're dropping some jewels, but you're giving some information that's needed, some relationship stuff. You've helped me with some relationship stuff. I hope that the listeners got some nuggets of stuff that they can do so they can start to do the work as well. My blessings and peace go to you. That's all that I have. Oh, you got anything letting us out, brother?
I just want to say we have a 6-season season 1 for the Unicorn's Couch. Rob's done a phenomenal job hosting the last 2 episodes. I don't know, Jay, I don't know how we're going to be able to keep up with this pace, but I think we have the last.
Iron sharpens iron, brother.
Iron sharpens iron. So we're excited for that. Thank you for Maryland, now D.C., thank you for Texas. Thank you for Nebraska. Thank you for all these other states. Thank you for France. Thank you for all these people. It's so humbling to know that we started this journey with the purpose of giving insight to things that we think would make people feel better and grow during this difficult time. And I want to say that this is not just therapeutic, hopefully for you, but it is often therapeutic for us as well. And so as we continue to grow, we want to exchange that energy with you. And so thanks again. Does anybody know the next topic for next week? They got that listed? If not,
I think it's me against the world, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. So we're going to end season 1 lovely next time. And for our new listeners and people that supported us, people from Florida, California, the list goes on and on. Hey, thank you. Thank you again for being part of this journey with us. You'll see things coming out in the future. You might see a website around this coming up for season 2. You might see a couple of beautiful gems for you to get more familiar with us and see us, and we see you too. So thanks again. Jay, anything?
Yeah, just, affirming the fact that we don't have all the answers, right? We just have a couple of ideas and insights and hope it touches you in a positive way and it helps you along the way. And in the immortal words of Bob Marley, he who feels it knows it, man. And we're dealing with a lot of emotions, right? Especially as we're talking about relationships and just, you know, life. So take time to understand the messages that the emotions have to send, right? Emotions are like energy in motion, right? And we got to understand what the energy is and what direction that motion is flowing in. So take time, be present with yourself, reflect, contemplate, be at peace with yourself as much as you can. And as always, man, look to catch up with you guys next week.
One love.
Peace.